All right, guys, we're ready for our four-season sunroom, and Daddy's gonna get a rec room with refreshments.
Oh, no, we'll be sleeping under the stars.
Mom, what about the one with, you know, the fun?
Nice try, little bro. It's a gym. My gym.
Hey, Grandma's getting her Four Seasons garden room. Weather tight and still like being outdoors.
Maybe a living room. Oh, no, wait. A family hub.
Yeah!
No matter what the budget, the season, or the climate, Four Seasons sunrooms let you and your family enjoy the outdoors inside. Call now to receive your free, no-obligation brochure from the premier manufacturer of sunrooms since 1975.
More reasons for Four Seasons now.
To find out more, call toll-free 800-942-8877. That's 800-942-8877. Call 800-942-8877 today.
This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
You know her from network radio, but now she's on the net and in your head.
Don't believe me, just watch.
This is the Fabulous Sports Pig on Radio Influence.
Bad weekend if you're playing college football last year, but it's great for me. I am the Fabulous Sports Babe. It's called the Babecast for a reason. For that, we're going to do a whole bunch of things today. We're going to talk to Brett McMurphy. Known him for such a long time at ESPN, as you well know, when it comes time for Brett McMurphy. That's the thing when it comes to college football. So we're going to talk a lot about Alabama and some of the other teams that are there, and Ohio State, of course. I want them to do well, but I like Michigan a lot. I do, but I don't want them to win when they're playing against Ohio State. But there are a lot of things that we're going to talk about during that. So Brett will come and join us, and that will be okay. And actually, I was going to tell you some other things, but maybe I'll talk to you about my favorite TV show coming up. Let's talk to Brett McMurphy, ESPN. We love him. He's going to talk to us. Come now. It's the Babecast. Brett, let's talk a lot about college football. A lot of upsets last weekend. Everybody went crazy. So let's start with Michigan. I'm thinking Michigan's got one game and then they have to go play at Ohio State. That doesn't sound very good for Michigan, does it?
No, it doesn't. And, what's ironic is the fact that Michigan lost actually hurts Ohio State's chances to play in the Big Ten title game. And Michigan still can make it. They have to beat Ohio State in a couple weeks in Columbus to do that. But, for the first time probably ever, Ohio State fans were rooting for Michigan to win last week. And Michigan promptly loses to Iowa. So if Ohio State beats Michigan in a couple weeks and Penn State doesn't lose, then Penn State will be in the Big Ten title game. Michigan and Ohio State will be watching on TV, and then we get to find out how much the selection committee values conference championships, or will they pick an 11-1 Ohio State team that did not even win their division?
So you think that, but would they let Penn State in anyway, or they would take Ohio State instead?
That's where it's going to get tricky. You know, because this is only the third year of the playoff, and they have continually said they want the best four teams in there. Well, that's been great, because the first 2 years there wasn't much controversy. There was a little bit. I still think they screwed TCU, dropping them from number three to number six in the final poll. But basically, they took the four best conference champions each of the first 2 years. If Ohio State wins out, and I think they'll beat Michigan, and I think they'll be 11-1. They will have played five teams in the top 25 rankings, the selection committee's top 25 rankings. They would have gone 4-1 against those five teams. Nobody else will have more quality wins than Ohio State. So what is the selection committee going to do? Are they going to value conference championships more than picking the best team? Are they going to penalize Ohio State for not winning the conference championship? That's something we don't know because they haven't been tested. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens, because Tuesday night, I fully expect Ohio State to be number two. And, you know, the thing that I've been discussing on SportsCenter this past week is I created a new verb, TCU'd. Will Ohio State get TCU'd in that last poll? Because they're at number two, and they win the next 2 weeks, including a win over what will be probably a number three, four, or five-ranked Michigan team.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to drop them off just because they didn't play in a conference championship game? Now, the committee can spin it however they want and say, well, they didn't win a conference championship. But again, you go back to their mission, and they say the four best teams. So I think this is going to be the first year where they really get tested. The only way the committee gets bailed out is if Penn State gets upset against Rutgers or Michigan State the next 2 weeks. Rutgers has absolutely no shot. I do think Michigan State could actually beat Penn State. That would be a big upset, because then if that happens, then Ohio State would go to the Big Ten championship game, and Ohio State obviously is a Big Ten champion. Then there's no controversy that they did not win the league championship.
You know, one of the things is we talk about that and we look at the Big 12 too. I want to go to the SEC, but there's a couple of things I want to. Do you believe that eye test about Wisconsin did this and Penn State did that? Do you believe all of that? Like, because the one I'm getting to is Louisville. Louisville's got to play, I think it's an 8-2 Houston team at Houston. And I'm thinking their offense is not that great. Their defense is getting better. But could Louisville lose at Houston this week?
They could. I don't think they will. I just think Louisville's so explosive. And Houston quarterback Greg Ward Jr. is not 100%.
Right.
You know, Houston is a different team than they were early in the year when they beat Oklahoma. You know, Nancy always laughs whenever you hear anyone talk about, well, the eye test, you know, you mm-hmm. need to value the eye test. You know what the eye test is? It's what do I think the best team is? It's
right.
Basically their opinion. So that's the challenge, or what makes college football unique, is unlike the NFL, unlike college basketball, you don't play the same opponent. So you can compare resumes, but they're apples and oranges a lot of times, because you don't play the same teams and there's not as many games. And so basically it comes down to the eye test. Who do I think is better? And that's just an opinion. You know, we may have the same opinion. The selection mm-hmm. committee may think something differently. The thing that hurts Louisville, and I do think that when you see them play, when they play like they did against Florida State, like they played like they did in the loss to Clemson, you know, getting down inside the 10-yard line in the final seconds, they very easily could have won that game. The thing that really hurts Louisville, and you have to consider this, is they have only played two teams in the top 25, and Houston's not in the top 25, and they split those two games. And so you look at the rest of their schedule, I think – the only other teams on their schedule that have a winning record is, I got to search here. I think they've only played three teams with winning records right now.
Right.
Wake Forest being the other one. So do you reward a team that hasn't really played anybody, but has looked really, really good? Or do you have to penalize them a little bit because they simply haven't played that tough a competition?
Let me do this before I go somewhere else. Michigan Spieth has got a broken collarbone, so Corn's going to be there. So how does that go for the next couple of games for them? They got a new quarterback, or is it load them up again because we're Michigan?
Yeah, Nancy, I think, you know, of the elite programs, I think Michigan's probably the one that would be impacted the least by a quarterback change, just because they, you know, you compare it to Clemson losing to Deshaun Watson, compare it to Louisville losing Lamar Jackson, compare it mm-hmm. to Alabama losing Jalen Hurts. I mean, how those teams would drop off big time. But with Michigan, I don't see as big of a drop off. Mm-hmm. That's not taking anything away from what he's done so far. I just don't think the offense revolves around the quarterbacks as much as these other guys. I think they'll be fine. You know, the game, Indiana's sneaky good. They could challenge him, because you wonder how Michigan's mindset is coming off mm-hmm, the upset mm-hmm. loss at Iowa, and then you got Ohio State next week. But I think of any of the elite teams that have a chance to get to the playoff, certainly I think Michigan can handle the loss of their quarterback better than anybody else.
You know, let me talk about, first of all, I don't want to go any farther than saying, is it true that Troy's number 25 in the top 25?
Yes. I'm like, well, I voted number 25 too.
Well, tell me about Troy. I just know that they're there, and I think it's great. And if they're not there ever again, it's great. But I just thought it was wonderful that they're in the top 25.
They are number 25 in the country, but they're only the third best team in Alabama. They're still behind Alabama and Auburn, but they're moving on up. They're leading the Sun Belt right now. And, you know, a lot of people forget about this. Week two, they go at Clemson and they lose 30-24.
Right.
And everybody thought, oh my God, what's wrong with Clemson? Well, obviously, I don't think Clemson played up to their potential coming off the win against Auburn the previous week. But also, I think that was kind of a sneak preview into, hey, this Troy team's, this isn't a bad team. So, you know, I don't think they have a shot to get in the group of five, New Year's Six bowl game, but yeah, it's huge. The first ever Sun Belt team to be ranked in the Associated Press rankings.
You know, I was talking to a friend of mine in Seattle, and I wrote to him on Saturday, and I said, okay, let's talk about, you know, Washington for my podcast and all that. And I'm writing to him Saturday night going, you know, I haven't been interested in Washington in 20 years, and now they're taking the damn gas pipe. You know, I mean, how can it be this? But the question is, isn't this team with Clay a lot better than it was at the beginning of the year, the USC team?
Oh, much better. I mean, you know, they made the switch at quarterback, and they are a totally different team. I mean, remember, Clay Helton and the people that I talked to, you know, thought that if Clay Helton may or may not survive, and if he did survive, this is early in the season, if he did survive, he was going to have to basically clean house with his assistant coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And now you look at what they've done. You know, they've won six in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's hard to find a team that's hotter than them right now. And, you know, the problem for SC is they had so many losses early. You know, they're out of the playoff picture. But certainly nobody wants to play them right now. And you talked about Washington. Washington is kind of similar to Louisville in that they've only played two top 25 teams, and they split those two games. They beat Utah mm-hmm. on the road by seven, and then they beat – and then they lose to USC.
Mm-hmm.
Washington's non-conference schedule is so bad that even Baylor's embarrassed by it. I mean, it's like Portland State, Rutgers. You know, it's the worst in Idaho. Although Idaho's going to a bowl game for the first time in a long time. But still, that's the worst non-conference schedule out there in the country. And so, yeah, they were very impressive, very dominating against a lot of teams. They thumped Stanford. They thumped Oregon. You know, obviously those teams are not as good as they have been in past years. So we really didn't know much about them. But, boy, USC showed that they were without question the better team in Seattle last week.
You know, and not for anything, but I happen to know his father a little bit. You do, too. And I'm like, well, I want you to do well, you know. And it's been such a disaster there that maybe it is going to turn around and he's going to be there for a little while. I'm talking about Clay. But I want him to be there, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And he's set now. I mean, he's, you know, this is a big, you know, because he was the interim coach. And then, you know, then he got the full-time job. And then, you know, you never, as a coach, you never like it when the AD that hired you is gone. And Pat Hayden is no longer AD at USC. And Lynn Swann's taken over there. And so, yeah, you got to be successful because the AD always kind of wants to have his guy. But when the coach is in there winning, there's no reason to make a change at this point. He's very secure, and if they gave half season coach of the year honors, he would certainly be one of the leading candidates for the last half of this year.
Now, you know who I got to talk about is the 10-0 Citadel. I'm like. I mean, they're going to play North Carolina. They never played. By the way, what does FBS mean? I have that question for you. I mean,
it's the old, okay, they used to be called Division One,
yeah,
and Division One AA. So Division One is the same as FBS, and it stands for Football Bowl Subdivision. And that FBS basically means the 128 schools in the FBS, they go to the bowl games. That's the higher group of Division One. Division One AA, which is called now the FCS, and that's Football Championship Subdivision. They are the ones that have the 16, I think it's 16 teams. Shoot, it may be more by now. 16-team playoff at the end of the year. They do not have bowl games, and that's the smaller, smaller part of Division One.
And I actually know that Sam Houston. I heard that. Go ahead, but I heard that Sam Houston State is like
fewer scholarships. And obviously they're not on TV every week, and they don't have as much resources. And if you're an FBS team, you can play as many FCS teams as you want in a year, but only one of them counts towards bowl eligibility.
Well, there you go. So I can't help it. I was looking at Citadel, and I thought, because I've known that they've been doing better, and now they're going to play North Carolina, which is a top 25 team, or I guess they got out of it now. But, you know, it's a big FBS school, if you will, and here's the Citadel. And I'm like, I don't know anything about this, but I guess I'm going to watch it and see how good this team really is. But this is the first time they've ever played a big, big team, though.
Yeah, I mean, they usually the FBS, or the bigger division schools, pretty much, there are a few exceptions, but pretty much all the FBS schools play at least one FCS school a year. And especially this week, I know you mentioned North Carolina and Citadel, but this week in the SEC, you have a lot of those games because the Alabamas and the Auburns of the world like to play the smaller school the week before their big rivalry game before the Iron Bowl.
What kind of money do they get when they're playing that? I mean, it's really kind of worth it for the team because they need the money no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at, you know, several hundred thousand dollars. Some get up to a million.
Wow.
Or over $1 million. It depends on who you're playing. Obviously, the bigger schools, the Alabamas of the world pay more. Those type of schools pay a lot more money. It also depends on how far these schools are coming from. If it's a school within the state, they may not get as much because they're just going to bus over. They don't need airfare.
Sure.
But no, it's good for the FCS schools, the smaller schools, because it's a way for them to subsidize their athletic department. And a lot of these smaller schools depend on that paycheck to basically survive. And, you know, kind of what's troubling is, you know, I know everybody, since we had the playoff, everybody thinks everybody should play the same schools and you can't play these smaller schools anymore.
Yeah.
The Big Ten actually has passed a rule that they will not allow their conference schools to play FCS members anymore going forward.
Mm.
And, you know, the flip side of that is a lot of these smaller schools won't be able to survive if they don't have that one-time payday.
Hey, let me ask you before I let you go, what do you think about Alabama going out and telling the pro players, hey, go look at the school in that school? What do you find about, you know, like, I think it's Alabama said this and everybody was like, well, why didn't we do that before?
Oh, you mean the players practicing?
Yeah, where he's got
the
guys that go to, no, I mean the pro players that used to be with him, and he said, go look at this when you have time and see what other people are doing as they're getting ready for whatever game they're getting for. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. I'm sure they're probably looking at Ohio State and whoever else they have to look at around there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things that kind of caught everybody by surprise is a few weeks ago when game day was at Alabama, they did a segment, and Blake Sims, who was former Alabama quarterback, did a segment with Sam Ponder, and she happened to mention, that he ran scout team quarterback this week for Alabama. So immediately my phone blew up saying from these coaches, hey, how can they do that? Is that legal? And I checked around. It is allowable under NCAA rules for former players to, quote, occasionally practice with their former team. And then since then, you come to find out they've been using Trent Richardson, a scout team, to play the part of Leonard Fournette. I think Marshawn Lynch has practiced with Cal in the past. And I saw a video today of Ohio State coach Urban Meyer was asked about this. He actually was unaware of the rule, and he didn't know, and he picked up his phone when he found out that this was the line, he said, hey, I've got to make some calls. Maybe get some guys in here to practice with us.
Hey, let me tell you about Scott Hansen. He's the host of the NFL Red Zone. It is my favorite channel in the world. There is no doubt about it. I put on the Red Zone channel at 1 o'clock, and until they get rid of me after I see all of the touchdowns at 7:30, boom, then I have to go watch something else. I love it. Even watching the Patriots, the Bucks, anybody, I got to watch the Red Zone channel all the time. And I'll go over and I'll watch something. I'll come right back to the Red Zone channel. I love it better than anybody in the whole wide world. Scott Hansen's the guy that you see every day. He's the host of the NFL Red Zone channel. They've got all the scoring plays, exciting action. It's every Sunday, 1 o'clock. Oh, it's the NFL Red Zone. I do love it. Scott Hansen, we're talking to you right now. Scott Hansen, I love you from the NFL Red Zone. It's the most favorite thing in the world. I feel like you're sitting with me now. This is not good, is it?
Babe, that's the best compliment you can give a broadcaster, as you well know. If you feel you made that connection with people and that you're a part of their routine, you're a part of them enjoying something that they love so much, in my case, the NFL, the best sport on the planet for my money, that's a fabulous connection that I've been fortunate to make with a lot of people, and I'm glad to hear with you as well.
Well, you know, I wonder, because people say, what are you doing on Sunday? I'm like, oh, do you want to go to lunch? No. Do you want to go to dinner?
No.
What are you talking about? No, don't buy.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to come over, I've got tea and lemonade, and that's fine. But don't talk to me, because even when I love the Patriots, even when I watch a game I want to, as soon as it goes to commercial, I'll go right back. And I spend most of my time there. And it's like, it's the greatest channel ever. And I think to myself, did you think this about baseball at some point? Did you think? No, it's the greatest channel that ever lived.
Yeah.
I'm thinking to myself. Yeah. Everybody's going, how the hell did he get this job? And I said, I don't know, but he was in the right place at the right time. They didn't pull him out of a cab. I know that.
No, they didn't. No. You know, it's funny when you say that. Like, if you're watching whatever game is on your broadcast network, let's say you just use the Patriots as an example, but you want to flip back over to NFL Red Zone, or I hear all the time, hey, you know, Cowboys are my favorite team, but they're playing on Monday Night Football, so I'm spending all day with you on Sunday, or so-and-so is my favorite team, but they're on the bye week, so I'm going to spend all Sunday with you. What I think people feel when they watch NFL Red Zone is, you know, you go to, like, a great movie, let's say a great action movie or a thriller, there doesn't always have to be an explosion every 60 seconds to make it exciting and tense. What a great action movie has to make you feel is there's something amazing going to happen at any turn in the moment. And I think NFL Red Zone is that way. When we cut to a new game and that team's on the 50-yard line, you don't know if you're going to see a 50-yard touchdown, if you're going to see the amazing one-handed catch, if you're going to see a pick six that comes back the other way for 50 yards, but it gives you the feeling that something amazing is going to happen. And we, as American sports fans, we feel like we all want to be know-it-alls, and so we want to see it all, and that's the one-stop shopping.
You know,
that is the place to be on Sunday.
Scott, I have to tell you, if there's anyone who doesn't have it, I feel sorry for them. But is there anyone really that doesn't have it now in this country? I mean, I got to be honest.
You know,
I was going to Europe, and I was looking at TV from England to get you know, other games that I couldn't get here. And now with the Red Zone, I'm in total teen heaven.
No, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, you mentioned overseas. We broadcast down into South America. We broadcast into the UK. I hear from fans in London all the time. People seem to just love it no matter what, because it just gives you the best of the sport. It just, you know, it's mainlining NFL football, if you will. Is there people who don't get it? Well, we don't have ratings because we don't have commercial breaks. Okay. So there aren't Nielsen ratings available, but I will tell you this, NFL Network, and obviously our whole parent company is the league. NFL Network is available in about 70 million homes, and therefore those 70 million homes have access to getting NFL Red Zone if they choose to, like, upgrade, you know, to the sports tier package and whatnot. So Are there homes that don't have it? Yeah, there could be, I suppose. But the way it has, the word of mouth has spread. Everyone who's thought about trying it, I think, has tried it. And once you try it, you get hooked.
Well, and one of the things, I'm like, well, we don't want to talk to them if they don't have the red zone. That's kind of the way I feel in this.
Yeah.
What, let me tell you something. Scott, what do you think about they're doing this thing in UK, and now we're going to do Mexico City, which I'm kind of interested to see anyway.
Well, it's going to be fascinating. You know, that stadium, Stadium Azteca in Mexico City, is one of the largest sports venues in the world. And what's going to be interesting about it, Babe, is this. So it's Monday Night Football. It's two teams that kind of have a natural relationship with Latin America, let's say, in the Houston Texans and the Oakland Raiders, okay? And the fact that it's just American football, that in other countries, people, like, we're attracted to things that are foreign to us. They're going to sell out that stadium, and it's going to be the most attended NFL football game ever. And it's going to break, I think the record might be like the Super Bowl that was held in the Rose Bowl that one year, like a decade or two ago. But they're going to have like 125,000 or some foolish number like that. And the highest, the most watched football game in history is going to be off of American soil. Now, the league loves spreading the game as much as they possibly can, obviously, with the London games and whatnot. It'll be interesting to see how much more the Spanish-speaking community embraces American football. I hope we get a great game down there. That would go a long way to a lot more people enjoying it as well.
Well, and I think that, you know, we like what's going on with Oakland, and I think Houston will be all right. It's a good, you know, it's not like you're taking the Patriots in Green Bay and you're down there. I mean, you know what you're doing down there. And I think that's really good. Scott, let me ask you something. Is everything you do really about fantasy football?
It's one of the main drivers we have, absolutely. Fantasy football has grown and grown and grown. I don't know if you played any type of rotisserie football or rotisserie baseball before the proliferation of the internet, but the internet has just made it such that people get every update. They can make all their roster changes and everything. So you look at, you know, how long have we all been online? 15, 20 years or so. Mm-hmm. And now it's like people want to talk about fantasy football as much as they want to talk about the real football. So I say this, if the Packers are your favorite team, just randomly grabbing a team, that's great. You watch the Packer game. You want to see every snap with Aaron Rodgers, blah, 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 blah. But if the Packers are your favorite team, I can almost guarantee you who your second favorite team is, and that's your fantasy football team. And you can't watch one game to see your fantasy football team. You need to watch every game, and there is one place to do that, and that's NFL Red Zone. And so a lot of times when I'm calling a touchdown on the show, if it's some unknown guy, and now we're in the back half of the season, so injuries have caught up to a lot of teams, and there's the third string tight end who's catching a red zone touchdown, and no one's ever heard of him, I might slide in there like, well, that helps nobody in fantasy football because I know none of you started, you know, Mike Smith, the backup tight end or whatever. So, yeah, it's a huge driver for our audience.
For people that are watching it, Scott, are you really in a green room? Is that essentially what it is? Because, you know, we watch it and we see everything going on in the background, but are you just in a green room? Is that sort of where you are?
Yeah. You've been in a lot of studios, I know, and you would probably be surprised as to the size of the studio relative to the size of the scope of the show and how the American sporting public watches it. Our studio is about the size of a big bedroom, like a big bedroom in somebody's house. That's about how big the whole thing is. It's a green screen, so when you see me come on at 1 o'clock Eastern, you see me come on camera there for the first time. All of that is a digitized background and everything. I just have a little desk in front of me. And then as soon as I go off camera and we go to the Octobox or whatever we do to kick off the show, which for those uninitiated, that's when we show 8 games at once. People love the Octobox. I walk around the front of the desk and I have a wall of monitors, and I stand about 2.5 feet from a wall of monitors for the next 6.5 hours. 6.5, 7 hours. So So, yeah, I have eye drops in hand, and I sit there, and I grind it out, and we bounce you around from the best thing from game to game across the country. The studio setup is underwhelming for when visitors come in. They're like, oh, I've watched this show my whole life, but I can't believe it's just kind of like a big walk-in closet, right?
Yeah.
You know, but it doesn't need to be. Ultimately, we only do, you know, babe, the show is 7 hours long. USA Today had one of their interns one time take a stopwatch and clock every second that I appeared on camera. Okay, so, you know, if I did a, hey, all the games are in commercial break. Welcome back inside the studio here. Everyone, Scott Hansen hosting you on NFL Red Zone Week 11, da-da-da-da-da. They would clock that. They, on the episode that they watched, they compounded the time that I was on camera, and it was, I want to say it was like 70-some seconds total in 7 hours. So it's not a studio show where, you know, how directors and producers like to do big sweeping shots with a boom cam and all of that and show all of the set off. It's not that. It's about the football. It's about the touchdowns. It's about the jaw-dropping moments of the NFL, and we don't need to be on camera for that. So I try and check my ego at the door. I fight with my producer sometimes. I'm like, I'm not on camera enough. I shouldn't have to wear a suit. I should be able to come in here in a sweatsuit or my pajamas and do this show. But we laugh at that and whatnot. But, yeah, that's kind of funny.
Scott, the one thing that people want to know is when do you get to go to the bathroom? We're very worried about you going to pee. We seem to be very interested in that around here.
Well, there are biological challenges to hosting a seven-hour show with no commercials and to increase the horrible pun to begin with. The number one challenge is to not have to use the facilities. So what I do is on Saturday night, I start watching what I eat and what I drink. Obviously, input equals output. Yes. And then on Sunday morning, we have a chef at the NFL studios who cooks me the same breakfast every single Sunday morning. Chef Nicholas, my man, my great guy. And it's a very salty, whole foods type breakfast that helps me to retain water. I have one bottle of water, and then I cut it off for the rest of the day. I use the restroom twice in the last hour before the show begins, and then it's the willpower of a ninja after that. You just got to focus on the football and not anything else that's going on. And I'll tell you this, I like to brag a little bit. I am 2.5 years without having to break away from the studio and hit the facilities.
Oh,
so I'm kind of proud about that.
Well, we'll give you that. Yeah. We'll give you like a big sign. It's been 2.5 years that Scott's had to not go to the bathroom. We've been Scott, tell me about you getting burned out.
Well, hopefully you can tell in this interview, and you and I have spoken before, I'm a pretty high energy guy in my day-to-day life. And the way I approach it is, whatever career I had gone into and whatever specific job I would be a part of, I would try and have it where I can push and have passion for whatever it is I'm doing. And I don't care if that would be a high school teacher, a doctor, a lawyer, a firefighter, whatever I would have chosen to do in my life. Well, I happened to hitch my wagon to something that has thrilled me since I've been 8 years old. And that's American football and the highest form of it, professional football. And for my money, the best athletes start to finish on the planet. So it naturally gets me going. So hopefully that insulates me a little bit from burnout. The second thing is I'm trying to serve my audience. You know, the reason you and I are speaking right now is not because I'm some kind of fabulous person. It's because the show that I'm the host of, that I've been entrusted with, has touched a nerve with the American sporting public the way few shows have. And when I orient my mind, when I focus my mind on how many millions of people maybe get one day off a week from their jobs, and they're going to spend it with me. You just told me at the beginning of this interview, you don't go to lunch with friends. No. You say, no, I'm going to cancel social engagements because I want to be there. That is something that is important to me, to be able to serve my audience. And so that gets my energy up even more. Now, that being said, burnout, I am fried at the end of a Sunday show. And by the end of the season, my energy is starting to get a little bit low. Hopefully it never comes across that way on television, though.
Oh, I don't think it ever comes across like that, especially what you're doing. But I mean, there was a time when you took some time off and said, okay, I'm not going to do that right now. I'm going to go to Africa. I'm going to go to Russia. I'm going to do some other things for yourself, not for doing television, but for yourself. Tell me about that.
Yeah, and that's some balance that I've had to strike in my life. My television career used to be everything in my life. It used to be all-encompassing in my life. And a lot of people throw themselves into their career, and I'm not judging anyone else. I can tell you this. It got out of hand with me.
Exactly.
Having something earthly being number one was threw off the balance that I needed in my life. Long story short, I had a spiritual conversion. I became a Christian about midway through my life, and everything changed in my life. And part of me living out my Christian faith is serving other people. So in the summer, when the players, NFL players, are on vacation, I try and take a trip every year. A lot of times it's overseas. You mentioned Russia or Haiti. I've been down to Mexico. I've gone to the Philippines, India, Africa. I've gone all over the place to help other people meet needs wherever they might pop up. And it's great. It's great, babe. It has nothing to do with football. A lot of people don't even know who I am or what I do. And you can just go and pour into other people's lives and give yourself some big perspective about how fortunate we are in our country and how blessed I am as an individual to have the job that I have. And now that sportscasting and my career is number two in my life or further down my priorities list, it could be a far greater number two than it ever could have been number one.
I can understand that completely. Scott, do you think the fact that, did you grow up in a religious household and you kind of came back to it in a way?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I did. I grew up in, I would say a religious household, meaning like we would go to church all the time and it was very formal and all of that. But really what I have now is a relationship with God. And some people might be like, what are you talking about? Don't bring a religion and stuff like that. But look, it's a part of life. It's absolutely a part of my life. And I don't judge anyone else, wherever they might be at on the spectrum of belief or disbelief. But I had a reawakening in my life or an awakening. You can term it a lot of different things.
Sure.
About midway through my life, I went down to the lowest point in my life. And at that time, Jesus, the real Jesus, came into my life, and it was the most profound, amazing, unbelievable, awesome. There aren't enough adjectives, and I use a lot of them describing touchdowns. There aren't enough adjectives to describe what God did in my life and what he is doing in my life through the subsequent years. Yeah.
I am so glad that you said it, just because I want people to know it's the guy besides the green room. I wanted them to know that there was this other guy that was going on in that. Speaking of which, are you going back to the green room? Because I'm getting ready and it's only Tuesday, but I'm waiting for Sunday.
Oh, I know. So tonight, as a matter of fact, I got to get going probably in just a second here, because tonight the NFL Research Department, NFL Network, they're the best. They're the best. They send me a 100 to 200 page packet on Tuesday night, which kind of puts a recap on the games that already happened on the previous Sunday and spins it forward looking ahead to this upcoming Sunday. So tonight I start diving into the research packet. Tomorrow, Wednesday, is open locker room in the NFL. So we start hearing some of the storylines, some of the quotes, maybe bulletin board material that comes out, start getting injury updates. And my whole week is building up. Like the players practice for that 3 hours on Sunday. I'm practicing and researching for my 7-hour show on Sunday. And it all leads up to it. So we will catch you Sunday, 1 o'clock Eastern on NFL Red Zone.
How much do we love the Red Zone channel if you don't have it? I got to tell you, at the beginning of this year, I was in Asheville and had to go find a bar. And, you know, I'm the worst person in the world because I'm the one that asks for cranberry juice and tonic. I don't even have beer. And I'm like, just bring me my cranberry juice while I'm watching, because I have to watch that more than anything else. I love it. Scott Hansen, the NFL Red Zone, thank you so much for putting that on. And you know what? If you want to put it on every day, I would watch it too. That's all I'm going to tell you. I happen to be the fabulous sports babe. It is the Babecast. You can always hear it right here on Radio Influence. You can hear it on iTunes. Oh, it's very lovely for you.
If you know the babe at all, you'll know the show never ends.
Don't believe me, just watch.
Follow her on Twitter at RealSportsBay and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. This has been The Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence. This is an On the Beach quick fix on Radio Influence.
So Uber, right? Mm-hmm. Our favorite way to get around drunken, you know, all whatever, every weekend, has now, you know, Uber Eats is this food delivery service.
Okay.
So
here
instead
we go.
Of like picking you up at your house,
yeah,
they're just going to
drop off
food for you.
I thought this happened a while ago. This just happened?
I think it just happened, like, in our area recently.
Okay, because I've been hearing about it in the news. Maybe it finally, okay. So, all right, I'm liking this.
So there's also Drinkly, which is the service that delivers liquor to your...
Drinkly,
yeah.
I like this. Oh, yeah.
Have you not used Drinkly? I think it's Drinkly, yeah.
No, I haven't used it. No. I got a Publix, like, a block away.
No. Well, see, this is for, like, people that don't want to leave their couch.
Yeah.
Like, for Sunday afternoon around 3 or 4 o'clock when you're glued
once you're out of beer,
I'm screwed. So mm-hmm. you get on your apps. Now we have Uber Eats that delivers food to our house, and we have Drinkly, which delivers the booze to our house.
I love this.
I don't understand why we're leaving our homes anymore.
Yeah. Well, why go to the game? That's why I don't leave the house anymore.
No.
You don't want to go to the game because fuck that. It's too hot. It's too expensive.
No.
You sit at home and watch it. It's a better experience at home. And now that I didn't even have to go to the store to get wine or beer mm-hmm. or anything, it's like, oh, it's over. I'm done.
Yeah. I think that's the way the world's going, though.
Oh,
to
yeah.
where we don't have to leave our bed or sofa all day long.
Great.
We work from home.
Yep.
We mm-hmm. work on our phones.
Yeah.
We have food delivered to us.
Oh, this sounds so good. Why would you ever want to deal with another person again?
No. Yeah. If you got to go somewhere, you get an Uber. It's super cheap.
Yep.
I mean...
I like
I don't
it.
Know.
What about so? How long does it say? I wonder how long it takes for the Uber food.
It's
like,
not long.
The Uber cab, like you're, it's there in 5 minutes.
Right. It depends on how close you are to the restaurant. So it has like just tracks your phone,
right.
And it says it'll give you the delivery time. So like the place near my house was only 15-20 minutes.
And if I'm an Uber driver, I'm definitely doing the Uber food instead of the Uber people. Why would you want to have people in your car when you
right.
can have food?
Just drop
you
off
could
food.
Sneak in a couple fries.
Right?
You could do whatever, and like you don't have to deal with people.
Yeah.
You don't have to deal with drunks throwing up in your car
yeah.
and just assholes and just with everything, all the pitfalls that come with being an Uber driver.
Mm-hmm.
You can just, deliver food.
I think it's a great idea.
Good for Uber. All right.
I should be an Uber. No, I shouldn't be an Uber Eats driver.
How much? Seriously, I would be 400 pounds if I got that job. Yeah.
I would too.
That's the
But that, how cool would it be? You get to go into like every single, pretty popular restaurant in town. You get to know everybody quickly.
It's true. Yeah.
Hey. What's a special tonight?
Would you grab a couple fries out of the
A couple fries?
I would.
Throw in an extra side for me while I'm standing here waiting for the food?
Yeah, why not?
I would weigh 400 pounds.
Totally. Because you're going to build that relationship with all the restaurants, and you'll get the hookup. You get the extra soup or whatever. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I think that's a good idea.
On the Beach can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.